everybody. Thank you all for attending today's exhibition talk, which will explore Hogarth's sharp-witted and often satirical observations of life in 18th century London. It now gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker this morning, Alan Morrison. Alan is Director of London Studies Programmes at and Principal Lecturer in the Department of English and Linguistics at the University of Westminster. He has also co-organised the forthcoming conference Seduced by the City, From Hogarth's London to Today, which is taking place here at Tate Britain on the 9th of March. And a shameful plug here, but there are still tickets available if you are interested. Alan will talk for about 45 minutes, and then afterwards there'll be an opportunity for questions. And we do have a roving mic, which I'll be coming around, so please wait for that when you have a question. And lastly, please make sure your mobile phones are all turned off. Thank you. Thank you, Alan.
Okay, thank you, Gemma. Well, I'm going to talk about some of the images in the Hogarth exhibition. I don't know whether everyone has already seen the exhibition or are we going to see it afterwards. Roy Porter, in his Social History of London, which is, I think, still London, a Social History, the best general history of London, says that this period, the period of Hogarth's London, was one in which Londoners began to fall in love with themselves. And I think that very nicely captures something of the feel of Hogarth's work and the other artists and writers who were contemporary to him and to whom I'll be making some reference. One of the most influential of the 18th century commentators on Hogarth, John Ireland, writes of Hogarth thus, "I don't know in what class to place his pictured stories. They're too much crowded with little incident for the dignity of history, for tragedy too comic. Yet they have a termination which forbids us to call them comedies." And this ambiguity about Hogarth and the variety of his work, I think, mirrors the experience of London at the time. London in the early 1700s was a city that was described by its residents and by visitors as a monster city, as a great wart or great wen. The population of London had risen from 1700, around about 450,000, to 675,000 by the 1750s. And by 1800, it was coming up close to a million. It was then the largest city of Paris, in Europe, much larger than Paris, and something like a 20th the size of any other large English city. So a huge and throbbing population. And remember that London at the time was a much smaller area than we would now consider. Marylebone was considered almost the countryside. Islington was the countryside indeed. You went to Islington on a Sunday to get away from the city, and we'll see Hogarth's portrayal of this in the Four Times of the Day. Kensington was little more than fields and gravel pits. And of course, we can see this still represented in London with Apsley House, the Duke of Wellington's house at Hyde Park Corner, which was in the time designated as number one London. We also see with this, alongside this incredible growth, a sort of demarcation developing between areas of London, between particularly the East End and the West End, and the growth of the area in between, from Covent Garden, Drury Lane, Charing Cross, St. Martin's, and what was then known as Leicester Fields, which of course later became the area that we know as Leicester Square. There'd been something of a move from the East End, from the city and the mercantile quarter of London after the Great Fire. Many of the wealthy merchants wanted to move away, possibly because of the effects of the smoke in the area, not from the fire, but from coal. Wren's great cathedral, St. Paul's, was actually built on the basis of a coal tax. And we see in the West End the